This is Jim Wilson, recorded by Chris Alden Lee on the 13th of April 2011. Jim Wilson, Part 1.
Full name, James Murray Wilson. Place of birth? Well, it's Ewswa Ford, a hill farm in the Cheviots, in the Borders.
And what's your date of birth?
Oh, 15th of October, 1931.
So you're going to be 80 this year?
I'll be 80 in October.
Yeah. And what name are you known by when you were with Fids?
I think I was always just known as Jim. I think so. Yes, as far as I know. Occasionally, I think... it's a Navy thing. I think I was often... Because I was Wilson, I was often called Tug. Because it's like Chalky White and...
Dusty Miller.
Dusty and all that. And if you were a Wilson, you were Tug Wilson. But I think it would mainly went with just Jim.
Well, tell me about your education, Jim. Where were you taught?
Where was I taught? Windy Half. Well, that's a little school, which is gone now, just a hill school I walked the school, and we walked 8 miles to school, four there and four back, and thought nothing of it because that's what people did.
Whereabouts was it, Georgia?
And just into Northumberland.
Oh, it's actually in England.
It was just in England.
So, yes. Are you English?
No, Scots parents and born in Scotland. Yes, no. But a border family, Liddesdale. Have you ever heard of Liddesdale? That's where we came from. There's the old saying, lock the door, Larriston, lie in a Liddesdale. Lock the door, Larriston, Lowther, come on. Was it? The Armstrongs are flying, the widows are crying. Castletoon is burning, and Oliver. It's gone. That was written by, the James Hogg.
Oh, right.
The Ettrick Shepherd.
Well, you became a shepherd, didn't you?
I was a shepherd. That's where, when I was at Ewswa Ford, I was a shepherd. Because we used to, the house stood at 1,000 feet. And we had we had Cheviot itself. There's the Cheviot Hills, and the main hill of the Cheviot is Cheviot. And we had sheep on Cheviot and on Bloody Bush, and that's what it is. I used to hear a hill called Yarnspitlaw. It's a beautiful part of the world that hasn't changed. I go every year, and in September I go for a month. It's like a pilgrimage every year. I go down to the borders. I just say to myself, I'm going home. Because I'm a Dunhamer. I don't belong here. It's all right here. I've been here a long time and I'm very fond of it. But it's not home. Home is where the heart is. And but I'm quite content here. I've got good neighbours. They've been good friends.
Here is Dundonald, isn't it?
Yes.
In the other pool.
Yes. Mm. And I couldn't get, I suppose I look at it now, not that it matters, Liz is gone and things, but... I couldn't get what I've got here now down in the borders because I can't afford it. Quite simple. And I'm quite content here. Put it this way, I look forward to my time going back home, and then when it gets the months coming to the end, I start looking forward to coming back.
Tell me about your sheep, your shepherding days then. What kind of sheep did you have?
Blackface, Scots blackface sheep. And in those days, of course, they're not worth anything now. I mean, not the wool isn't worth very much. It's mostly for meat. But it was for wool and lambs. And it was just a hill farm. And we had four shepherds. And it was a big farm.
So you were learning, you were 14, and you were learning from other shepherds.
Yes, well, you pick an awful lot up if you're on a hill farm as a little lad. Because you're with your dad, isn't it? You just follow them around. And we used to do the clipping, because it's old-fashioned clipping. It's all done by hand then. In fact, I've still got my shears down in the shed down there, which I used to use. But it's all I can't clip with a machine. No, I enjoyed it. I'm glad I did, because there was some very, well, not say characters, it is supposed to be a character, but not in the, what people want to say characters. There were some very special men amongst the Hill.
How do you mean?
Well, I think there were, to me there was, you know, and, well, they were very independent and very, they lived a lonely life in a way, so they had to be independent and look after everything themselves. And I don't know, they were a bit unique, a lot of the old boys. I do remember once, my father, of course, and I remember 1947, which was a terrible storm. And I remember old Bob Dunn, who was at Buckham's Waas, Walls, but pronounced Waas, Buckham's Waas, it's now a ruin. And I remember he came over to see me dad, was in the end of the storm.
Snowstorm?
Yes, and it went on for months. And of course, I would be, I don't know how old I was then, 47, I must have been 15, 16. But even then, in those days, young boys were seen and not heard, especially when older men came in. And I'd never heard my father talk about the First World War. None of them did. Occasionally, no, he never did. After he died, my mother told me things, and that's what he'd have told her, but he wouldn't have told her everything. But I do remember this, because old Bob Dunn come in, and he said, my dad, Dawson, that was his father, Christian Dawson. He said, well, I think, Dawson, that's the worst storm since 1917. And I remember, and he said, and you know where we were then? My dad said, aye, we were in the trenches. Aye. And it was good. I couldn't help but when it was, he didn't hear this sort of stuff. He says, that's a full war taken prisoner. Aye. He says, I went to put the, and I heard, and he told me, and they were sent to Poland to work in mines. And my dad had been wounded in the knee. And it got mended. But I suppose dressed in rags and probably not very well clothed and not very well fed, probably, but I know that apparently they were coming back from work with guards on them, but they just marched and were kicking an old tin playing football. It hit me dad under the knee and it turned septic. And, this came out and it was a jerk, it was put in hospital and the leg had to come off. But there was a German doctor was visiting them, and there was no need for the man's leg to come off. It was the Germans who saved it. And this conversation went on, and I hadn't heard this before, but I just sat and listened. And another thing I didn't know, it was an armistice. They weren't defeated, the Germans, in the First World War. There was a truce. And all they did was, when I didn't know this, they just opened the prisoner ward and it went walk home. And they walked, and it was November. And they walked through, and Poland's bitter. They walked right through Poland, right through Germany, to the French lines.
And that winter of 47 in Northumberland was worse than that, was it?
It was worse than that. But that's what he said. Old Bob Dunn said that's how the conversation started. He said, I think this is the worst storm since 1917. And that's what the conversation kicked off. He says, and you know where we were then.
So you were spending time as a lad then, in the storm, in the snow.
Yes.
But lambing time, I guess.
Yes, sir. Well,
were you lambing in the winter?
Yes.
Lambing in snow?
Yes.
So you kind of got used to snow, did you?
Well, yes, I suppose. Well, we were high up. And often, I mean, we would be plotching about in the snow and you'd get onto hills and the whole countryside's black. It just was just the Cheviot Hills were white. You could look right down and you could look right to the North Sea, and down in the North Sea was black ground. But the Cheviot Hills were white, just a bit like these hills.
Let's move on, because we're talking primarily about your Antarctic time. But before you went to the Antarctic, you actually left the hills and worked in a shipyard, is that
right? I worked in the shipyards, because, again, my father you're going to have a trade. Aye?
Good parental advice, that, isn't it?
Yes, and well, looking back on it, and I got a very good apprenticeship, and I worked at the people who invented, you know, ever heard of Parsons? On the Tyne it was, and Grubb Parsons, they invented the turbine. And, well, it was through that I got to the Antarctic, because I eventually saw a job advertised. Well, I had a friend who had been, and he gives us the address, and I thought, well, what was it, a Tuppence Halfpenny stamp, and you just apply or you don't. Anyway, I got an interview. But I only got an interview because I'd served my time as a ship's engineer. And if I'd gone as a shepherd, you wouldn't have gone. So my father was right. It was better to have a... Liz was the same, her father. She got a very good place in Surrey somewhere, was on a gardens, rose gardens, but she painted, and she did go to Slade's and some art college in Birmingham, but our dad said no, get a trade first. You can paint any bloody time you like, you know. Well, mine was the same. I never liked the shipyards. But again, I suppose, maybe it was the way I was brought up. But I used to say, if my dad said jump in the Tweed, you jumped in the Tweed. Well, it's an old change now, hasn't it? Well, maybe, I don't know how, you're about the same age as me, you might be a bit younger, but it's much the same.
I'm 58.
58, so you're quite a bit younger than me. But I know that in those days, that those fellas said, if they don't do as I do as I bloody say.
So the shipyard was not in Newcastle.
It was down the Tyne.
Down the Tyne. And what was it that made you think about going to the Antarctic?
Because I had a friend I used to go walking with by
this
then.
This is Fred Oliver?
Yes. How did you know that?
It's written down in front of me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know where Fred is, because I haven't seen him for years. The last time I saw him, he was in Vancouver. Yes, Freddie, I don't know where he is. He was a bit younger than me, not very much, but yes, he'd served his time in the shipyards too. And had got to the Antarctic somehow, and I knew he was in the Antarctic. Then he only did one trip, like two winters, and he came back, and he came to where I was, to use his fort, to see me. And then he told me all about it. And I thought, well, that's... And he gave us the address. And that's how I applied. And I thought, well, faint heart, isn't it? I mean, just give it a go.
Did you know anything about the Antarctic before, Fred?
Not a thing.
You not read about Scott and Shackleton?
Oh, I'd read bits about Scott and Shackleton, yeah. Yes. And I had no... I think I wanted to go, but I must admit I didn't think I ever would, because it didn't matter so much then, because the FIDs in those days, there were very few had gone to university. I mean, I can remember whole winters I was there, and there wasn't a university man there. The very first one, in fact, somebody, it was Alan was putting them. The one that I can remember was Peter Bird, and he was at Cambridge. That was the first one I can remember. And but I think, well, I wouldn't have nowadays. I wouldn't get a job with the British Antarctic Survey because I haven't been to university. But again, in my time, an awful lot of the chaps that were FIDs on the bases were ex-National Servicemen. I'd been in Korea and some had been in Malaya. And that makes a difference. It was Korea made a difference to me and me dad. He was good. It was all, like, when I came back from Korea, our relationship was much better because he knew and I knew and he knew and I knew and that was it. But it wasn't gone to that. It was just, what do you think? You know.
So he treated you as a man when he came
yes,
back?
Yes, yes, he did. That's absolutely correct.
So do you think...
I remember him, you know, sort of saying once, and it was the same as Geordie Dinan said. It was a pouring of bloody rain one day and there was no tractors, there was horses. He said, go and bring them horses in. It's far over wet for them to be out. And after you've done that, you can go away and cut thistles. That is old-time shepherding. It didn't matter, but, I mean, the horses were more important than the men. They cost more than the men.
So you saw Fred and you saw an advert, or rather you wrote to
I wrote...
FIDS. You wrote to FIDS.
I wrote to FIDS, and I... And, well, it's a long time ago, but it's beside the point. I think I had to get 3 independent referees, if that's the right word, which I got. I just asked 3 men that I knew, older men than me, fellas my father's age.
Yeah.
And then eventually I got an interview, and I went to London, and... Well, there we are. And,
what was the interview like, Jim? Rigorous?
I think it rather was. But I there was one part of it, I'll always remember that bit, because I thought I'd blown it. I remember, and they were saying about if you sailed, in October or September. And I remember saying... I remember saying, because still the hill farm, you know. Oh, I said, well, I can't come till we finish the hay. And as soon as I said it, I thought, well, that's the end of that bloody job. You know, because I thought, oh, no, I couldn't leave it. Well, you couldn't, you see.
So what was their response to that?
Well, they seemed to be all right. I did.
They let you finish the hay, did they?
Yes. I mean, I just thought, well... It was a bit like having all these ships and aeroplanes waiting, but we can't go till Jim Wilson's finished the hay. It's like a battle, isn't it? I mean, like the Spaniards, there's time to beat the Spaniards and finish the game of bowls. You know? I'm what did they call him? I knew him quite well. The Welsh chap, he's dead. Sloman?
Bill Sloman.
Well, I got to know Bill quite well, because I went for quite a long time.
Tell me about Bill Sloman, then. What do you make of him?
Well, I rather liked old Bill. He was from Anglesey, wasn't he? And I mentioned this, and I can't remember. He says, I also remember you. I remember him telling me this, so he said, but I can't remember doing this. He says, I used to smoke a pipe right up till I was nearly 70, you know. I just stopped. Don't ask me why. I stopped. They didn't have any baccy along at the little shop here. And I came out and I thought, well, I can go across to Old Bay and get some. And I thought, no, I don't need to. And I stopped. And I've still got all my pipes. I did enjoy the pipe.
So tell me about Bill Sloman. What was good about him? Apart from the fact he chose you.
Well, I don't know about that. I thought he was quite a shrewd cookie.
Really. Do you think you were being sussed out in that interview by Bill?
Oh, I think so. I'm sure of it. Because I remember him saying, I can't remember this either, that I got me pipe out during the interview and filled it and lit it and started smoking it. And I think he said, he says, I remember that. He said, I says, I can't. He said, well, it showed you were quite relaxed. And Another thing, well, I do remember this too, because I went, the interview was over, and then I had to go into another room, and there was a chap there sitting, and I didn't know him, but if you may remember, there was a thing called the Palestine Police one time. And
explain.
Yeah, pardon?
Could you explain?
Well, there was a police force in Palestine.
Oh, right, okay.
And he had been in the Palestine, but he was reapplying for the Palestine Police. And somebody said I had to go for a medical in a very expensive place, as it must have been. It was, well, the Harley Street. And as I got, he said, well, and I didn't know, but he was an old timer, I suppose. He says, well, you've got the job, son. I said, well, how do you know that? He says, because they've asked you to go for a medical. And if you pass the medical, you've got the job. But I had heather growing up between my toes. And, I was in London. And I was a hill lad. And, if I had a collie dog, I'd been all right. But
so how do you feel about it when you suddenly realise you were going to go to the Antarctic?
I think I was flattered, I suppose, because it was a wonderful thing.
What was your old dad's view? What did he make of it?
Well, I think he was too, but he would never show it. My mother was.
She was proud of you or worried?
I think both, I would think. And my dad, I think he sort of nodded, that's our age. And I don't know whether I had or not, but he probably thought, I think he's got it in him. but maybe I haven't. but and it was a very interesting time, because I never got to where I was going, not for many years, because I had some very bad winters. And eventually, I put down to go to Stonington. And, of course, Margaret Bay was never opened up. And was Fuchs on the boat? Or maybe the next year? Because the Trans-Antarctic Expedition was on. That was in 1958.
So and you'd heard about that, hadn't you?
What?
Had you heard about that before you applied?
Oh, aye. Yeah, yeah. And what else was on? The International Geophysical Year, which went on for years. And so this ship, you can either go back to Land of Home, what did the lad used to call it? England, Land of Home and Beauty. So I put down to go to Admiralty Bay in the South Shetlands. And, of course, I wasn't a diesel mechanic when I got there. And it was even better because I became a dog team driver for Mr. Barton, Colin Barton, who was our geologist. And he was going to go to W. See, everybody never, half the people never got to where they were going.
Because of the ice conditions.
Because of the ice conditions.
Yeah.
And Dick started to do geology in King George the Fifth Island.
Dick?
Dick Barton.
Oh, Duncan Cass.
What?
Duncan Carr.
No, I knew Duncan. Yes, no, I knew. No. This was a chap called Barton. He was from, I can't remember the name of the little town, but it was in Monmouthshire.
Right, so Dick was a nickname, I guess.
Yes, he was known as Dick Barton because his surname was Barton. And do you remember Dick Barton, Special Agent, Sandy and Jock? So because he was Barton, he was Dick.
And Duncan Carse, of course, played Dick Barton.
That's correct, and he played it.
So you were sent, in fact, to Admiralty Bay, is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
And then when I got there, there was a diesel mechanic there, but Dick wasn't supposed to be there either, and he was a geologist, but there was dogs, because some of the dogs, of course, that were going to go to Margaret Bay, they had nowhere to go either. So back to Admiralty Bay, and I became a dog driver, we'll say.
This was 1959, wasn't it?
59, that's right.
Had you'd worked with dogs, of course, with the sheep, hadn't
you? I'd worked with dogs with the sheep.
And did that come in handy, that
Very,
experience?
Very much. In fact, we ended up, we had the best dog team there was.
They were called?
The Shambles.
The Shambles?
Yes, I used to call it the Shambles. But, you know, I could leave them just say to lie down.
What was their proper name?
No, I used to call them that was their proper name.
So just tell me the difference then between handling collies and handling huskies.
I didn't find a great deal. Because they're much... No, I didn't find a great deal. You got to know the kind of nature and the nature... Because huskies are quite... The ones that I knew, they weren't what people seem to think. Ferocious beasts, they were quite... quite roll over on their back and want to be tickled more than anything else. Or maybe the British are better at handling animals or dogs than... I know that we had huskies at Deception, and they always used to go mad if the Chileans or the Argentinians came. But I think they've smelt differently, because Fids were usually smelly, and all these other chaps had powder and squirty stuff on. I didn't see much. I worked them, I tried to train them as I knew I did huskies, as I did collies. I didn't know any other way. I'd come up from that height, and I'd been told that was what I did. But they were a good team, and...
Were they as disciplined as your collies had been on the hill farm?
Well, there was a difference that they loved to fight. And
how do you deal with that?
Wallop them. Because, you can bite them. That's what I used to do, bite their ears. Because they don't feel pain. I mean, you can belt them with your hand, but your hand gets sore. You know? I didn't find not a great deal different, because I used to, not, they weren't mine, but there was, in those days, there were hunts. Great hunting country, the borders, and the foxhounds, they would let out pups to various farms to bring them up. And they were, well, they were hounds. And the hounds were much the same. They were, you parade them, and I don't know.
What were the Shambles like on Admiralty Bay when you took them over? Were they a fully formed team, or did you have to work with them?
They hadn't been worked very much because, well, there wasn't the work for them. Because a lot of work, but when Colin came, he got a, what, I forget the name of the chap, he was a South African.
Ray Eady.
That's the fella, and he was in, I think, Birmingham, at the university.
Correct.
And I think the geology was done in Birmingham, and he got a programme for Barton to do, because he was going to work at Darbo Bay, which was 300 or 400 miles away. So that all that work was that wasn't done, and.
But I'm interested in how you worked with the dogs to get them into tip-top condition as a team.
Well, we took them out every day. I don't know. You get to know them.
It came naturally, did it?
I think. Yes, I would say it probably did. Not that sounds a bit big-headed, but. A bit more. I had more idea than the other fellas.
You would have, wouldn't you?
Exactly. I mean, I had more idea than the other ones. Mm. But that not to say they didn't learn, because the Brits are pretty good at... I think the Brits are... And Fids especially. I remember Johnny Green, who was IC Troops, who became a friend of mine. Johnny used to say, Fids can do any bloody thing. And a lot of them could. They were an odd race, really. They may be changed now, but I think they have changed. I've never seen them because I haven't been to I've been to an Antarctic club dinner many, many years ago. But the only chap, well, the chap I only see, and of course he was Liz's brother, and Simon was there a long time, and he used to tell me, well, it's changed, Jim. I saw it change. I saw the new type of FID come in who were... We'd done all the exploration, all the work. You know, they were all sort of had computers and things, and that didn't interest me one little.
When are you talking about now? The 1970s now, are you?
Well, that's when I finished.
Yeah. So before you finished, you saw the change then?
I saw the change. The change was starting at the end of the 60s.
Yeah.
I think in 58 and 59, it hadn't changed one little bit
from Scott.
Exactly. Yeah. Or from the British Greenland Expedition.
Tell me a bit about Johnny Green, because people mention him, but I never actually met somebody who was a friend of his. So what was he like as a chap?
Oh, I liked John. He was good. He was all right. I got to know him. Well, I was there. Just because I was there a few winters. I remember saying, I'll tell him once, I remember somebody said, and I said, that's a bloody lie you've just told that chap, Johnny. He said, yes. What's a lie? Makes them happy, he says. He says, and it keeps them happy. And then when they find out it's a lie, they're going home and they don't care. So there was a bit of that about him.
He was a pragmatic man, was he?
I would say so, yes.
Yeah.
But his heart was in the right place. I think he did quite a good job. He was army. But I think when I went first with FIDS, we got the least money of anybody in the Antarctic. I mean, the Australians, everybody got more than us, and you could be a doctor. It was very British, the way they did it. You could be a doctor and you got £300 a year. But you got top rate when you got the 26 and you got £420 a year, whether you wanted it or not. And
what was the diesel mechanic on then?
That was that's
same as a doctor?
Everybody was the same. Everybody was the same. You went up when you got the four. When you got the 26, you got 420 a year, and if you'd be 40, you still got 420 a year. You came to the because that's as high. And then I remember they got £50 a year, and I think you got £50 if you were the base leader if you wanted to, but nobody wanted to be base leader.
Really?
Oh, very few that I knew.
Why was that?
I don't really know. I never wanted to be base leader. And I never was, but I never wanted. I was, I forget what they used to call them, second in command for once or twice, base leader under. No, there was nothing very much to do anyway. I was quite happy. Well, I wasn't a diesel mechanic for... Because the same thing happened my second year. I thought, I'll put down to go to Horseshoe Island. Again, Marguerite Bay. And the same thing happened.
Couldn't get in. So you did two seasons at Admiralty Bay.
Two seasons at Admiralty Bay.
Let me just ask you, I'm sorry to bring this up, but there were a couple of tragedies in the first season.
I was there.
At Admiralty Bay.
Yes, I was there.
What do you remember? This is the Alan Sharman.
Well, I hadn't been there very long. Because I didn't. Alan's was St George's Day, I think, April the 26th or the 23rd. And I'd been there literally about a week. But I did know him, but not very well.
You knew him before you got there?
Oh, I didn't know him at all.
Oh, so you met him for a week, basically?
Yes. But I remember the, well, we call it an accident. I remember Tinkers. Much more because I was involved in it. Tinkerbell.
Talk about Alan first of all, because, I mean, you were new, you were fresh in the Antarctic, and within a week of you arriving, one of your colleagues had been killed, hadn't he?
That's right.
I mean, that must have been...
It was an awful thing, and it affected a lot of people. And certainly the second death affected people even more. In fact, one or two people didn't want to go out. I can't say I was like that.
Tell me about Dennis Bell then. What happened to him?
Well, he fell down a crevasse, and he did one or two things he should never have done. He had no skis on, and he walked in front of his team up a glacier. Anyway, Jeff was with him, and they got
Jeff.
I'm trying to remember his surname.
Doesn't matter. We can look it up. Don't worry.
Yeah, Jeff Stokes. I think it was Jeff Stokes. I've got some pictures of us burying one of them. But probably it would be Alan Sharman. There's four cairns, but there's only two bodies because Tinks is still there because he dropped the rope and he came up. But again, it's his own fault. He didn't have a proper... he only had a dog's collar, which he had. He got jammed. And, of course, they were using the dogs, and the dogs just pulled and broke the collar, and down again he went.
He tied the rope to his belt, is that correct?
That's right, that's right. And the belt was a dog's collar. And, of course, he went down again. That was the finish of him. I remember it quite well.
Where were you at the time?
We were going out to the Beardmore, up to the glacier, not the the glacier he was on, to help, because it was the middle of winter. I think it was in July.
So you were on base when it happened.
Aye.
And you were called out.
Yes, that's right. I think Jeff called us out, because that's how we knew about it. Mm. Alan Sharman's, that was, you might have met, was Russ Thompson.
Russell Thompson, yeah.
They went for a walk on a Sunday, and they had, I think it was Fluffy, one of the bitches, and they came over the mountain called the Flagstaff, and a little glacier. It's nearly gone now, because I've seen pictures, and it's just about gone. You can hardly see it. Anyway, Fluffy came and knocked our feet away, and they started to slide down this snow slope, and there's a stone pointing up through the snow, and Russ hit it with his hip, and he came into the base limping, and the other lad hit it on the back of his head, and that was the end of it. It took the back of his head, he came over, but Russ was just, they went down this slope together. And well, it was a Sunday afternoon. You could see the base from where we went up and got them, and that was that. And made a coffin and buried him. And he's not doing very far.
So there were two deaths in your first year. Did you feel as though perhaps you'd made a mistake at this point? Or was it just something you took in your stride?
This sounds very big-headed, but I think I think that's no. When you've about, well, I've just thought there when you said, but I probably thought exactly the same. You've been through worse than this, Jim. I mean, the Battle of the River Plain. It was bad, but it wasn't career. You know. Mm. I think that well that would be. That would be... I'm not saying that was my thought, but that would be my thought now. It probably was then. I think I would say, well, you've been through worse than this, lad.
But the atmosphere on the base must have been very affected.
It was. It was very sad. There was one night chap, but he was... Well, he was a... I forget, it's a long time ago. Mm. But I remember... He's an ex-Navy lad. I see his name up. and he was all right. But it and it happened again with me when I went to Macquarie. We weren't there long, and another one went down. And I thought, this is it's not fun anymore.
That was the Australian base.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll come to that later on.
No. I didn't have any. There wasn't any others.
Again, it was a crevasse accident, was it, at Macquarie?
No, he went down he was going up to a nest, a sooty albatross, and pulled a piece of tussock grass which came away, and of course it was like this.
Vertigo.
Yes, and down he went. And I thought, oh, no, not again.
Hmm.
You know, and he was just a young lad.
Did these accidents change the way you went about what you did in the Antarctic? Were you more careful after the...
I was, but I think, yes, but I think, well, if you know the expression, it's a Scots expression, and if somebody else knew, Carcanny. And I went Carcanny.
Which means?
Take it easy. Take, watch what you...
Watch your step.
Watch your step. Yeah. Yeah, Carcanny. I don't know that's what it means. I mean, just watch Carcanny. Watch what you're doing.
Okay. So what sort of work were you doing at Ambleside Bay? You weren't being the diesel mechanic.
Looked after the dogs.
You were in charge of the dogs?
I was in charge of the dogs. And I used to help Evan. Was it Evan Watson? He was from Argyle. He was a diesel mechanic, but I used to help him with any biggish jobs in the diesel shed. He was a diesel mechanic. And that's what he went there as a diesel mechanic, and I didn't think it was my place to go in unless he asked to be. That was his posting. I would have felt the same if I'd got to Stonington and I was a diesel mechanic. I don't want anybody else to come into the bloody diesel. I'm here to do that. But I got an all right way, his position was that he was going to Admiralty Bay as diesel mechanic, and he was there.
So how far did he get with the dogs then on your sledging trips?
All over King George Island, and we did it all.
And were these working trips, or were they...
Oh, yeah, always. Yes, always.
You were taking scientists with you?
No, just myself and Colin, just the two of us. And he was doing geology. He was doing the geology work. Yeah. And then I remember we were away quite a long time because we couldn't get back. I remember coming back to get to Admiralty Bay, and what should have been all came over, turn nunatak, and what should have been all lovely sea ice was black water, and it's not supposed to go out in August, and of course we didn't have any grub. We only went away for a few weeks, so we were away for nearly 6 months by the time we got back, because we went back over the top to Cape. I think it was Cape Lion's Rump, they called it. We put ourselves immediately on half rations and the dogs on half rations. We couldn't get home, we couldn't get back. We contacted base and kept that to the minimum because the batteries we had with the old 68 sets, they were getting flat. We couldn't charge them up. And we just waited at we both knew that at King Lion's Rump was, we'll wait till the penguins and the seals come back. And that's all we did. We just sat and waited till the penguins and seals.
Because they were source of food, you mean?
They were food. And we could feed the dogs on them and we could eat them. But by then, we couldn't contact the ship because it was August. I think it was the Shackleton. The Shackleton was in Southampton, the other side of the bloody world. Had no intention of leaving for another 2 months. So that was that, and we just waited there, twiddling our thumbs.
So you had a tent, I presume?
Oh, we had a tent, yes. Yeah. Yes, we had a tent and we had plenty to eat in the end. And we had still had paraffin. And I always remember that the dear old shack came in on Christmas Eve and picked this all up. And we got on board, and ships, as you probably know, always have lovely hot water. And we were another Scots expression, we were minging, if you know, we were stinking. And I remember getting on board in this shower.
So you were stuck? You were laid up for 6 months, did you say?
Well, by the time, yes, it was December. We left in July, which is quite a long time. They were very good to us, sir. We got a good Christmas dinner, and the talk brought us round to base, and we had a very nice Christmas.
How did you pass the time? Because in your isolation?
Well, conversation. It sounds strange, but conversation. And it's Monopoly. I always used to call it Monotony. And play Monotony. And I used to let Dick win. And we had a few books, not many. I do remember when we packed up, he was lying on a Reader's Digest, I think, that I'd never read, but it had got got underneath his sleeping bag, and he had just lain on it, you know. And I remember, bastard, that's a bloody book I've never read. I didn't know I had it.
But I'm interested in the psychology of that situation, though, because it could have really deteriorated, couldn't it? You're stuck for so long, prospect of getting home, running out of food, running out of paraffin, running out of radio.
Everything.
Two blokes.
Yeah.
You were never at each other's throats?
No. No. In fact, no. In fact, I stopped with him. He was a friend. And he must have heard I was going to Australia. And I stopped with him for 3 weeks when I first went, the Australians were Australians, and you could only get a job with an Ari by going to bloody Australia. So I thought, well...
And Barton was in Australia, was he?
Yes, he ended up as a... He was married then. He married, like, the secretary of Edie. She was Edie's secretary, and they had a family.
Do you remember her name?
No, I can't.
No, all right.
But I know where they lived, in Yalon. And it was what?
No, nothing.
No, it was in Victoria. But I'd contacted them and I told them what I was doing. And because I suppose, intimate buddies in the end. And he said, well, if you come and stop with us. And it was in Yalon, which is not that far from Melbourne, maybe 100 miles. That's not far in Australia. And it's a mining town. And he was a geologist he got a very good job in the end, but he was a geologist for Victoria. And Victoria is a small state, but it's still about the size of Britain.
Hmm.
And he eventually got a very good job, and he was one of the head geologists for Australia. And so I went out and I stopped with him, he could get a train from up to Melbourne. I got an interview with the Australians. I stopped with Colin for quite a while. Maybe I said 3 weeks, it may have been more than 3 weeks. Because I did the interview, and I think I'd more or less got it, they were very quick in telling me, but they weren't again. It was probably, did I leave in, I think I got there in April. I sailed out. Well, that was the way I wanted to go. I don't think there was many flying, but it doesn't matter that. But I think I got there. I think I left in March and got Aussie in April.
In which year?
70.
And Colin, what was Colin's second name again?
Barton.
Colin Barton. All right.
I'm trying to remember. He's Rogerston was the name of the... He was a farmer's son, Rogerston. His father was... His brother was an ex... But he was wartime. He was a colonel. he was a wartime colonel.
Who was Rogerston?
Rogerston was the little village he lived in. Monmouthshire.
Oh, okay.
I said Monmouthshire, but I couldn't remember the name. Oh. It's on the Usk, a river called the Usk. Mm. I think I was there once. It's quite nice.
Let's just go back a bit, Jim, because we're kind of leaping ahead here, rather. So you did two winters at Admiralty Bay.
Two winters at Admiralty Bay.
And was it, apart from the tragedies, were they happy years?
Yes, they were. Yes, they were. Mm. Probably my second one better than the first.
Because?
I think I liked the base commander of the second year better than I liked the one at the first year. And that was just... it was Mike Kersbrook.
This is 1960, right?
Yeah, 1960. I think, well, he came from... He was a Lancashire lad.
Mm. But you were closing the base down, weren't you?
We closed it down, that's right. We closed it down.
Why was that?
Because all the work was done. It was abandoned, and I believe it's been all cleared up altogether, so I've been told. There's no hut there now. Mm. I don't know about the old hut, it's still there.
What do you remember about that closing down period?
Nothing very much. I remember painting all the windows and putting boards up and knocking bits of wood over to save the windows getting broken. And
you're painting the windows?
Well, yeah, we used to paint the windows. Oh, not the frames. Window, the frames.
The frames,
and
yes,
we used to crease hold it every year. You know, the Brits, they used to look after the huts quite a lot. But it becomes, you know, before we got picked up by the Royal Navy, and it was over very quick. Some helicopters came in and the dogs went away and we went away and it was all over.
Where did the dogs go?
Hope Bay.
The shambles went to Hope's Bay?
Hope Bay, yeah.
All of them?
All of them.
There was no culling?
No. Might have been after, but not in my... No.
And you came home, didn't you?
I came home.
Was that what you wanted to do?
Well, I was finished. That was end of tale. And I thought, well...
It wasn't.
Well, I still wanted to go to Marguerite Bay. And I came back, and I think I would see Johnny Green on the boat coming back, and say, look, I said... I'm going to go to bloody Stonington. I said, can I? Yes, he says, you can put in for the... And see. And so I got to Stonington.
So you were back for a year, for a season?
I was back. I got back in May. May till October.
Right. 61, that would be.
Yes, well, I can't. I don't. Yes.
And what did you do in those months?
Came up here.
So you didn't have a job at all?
Oh, no.
No.
No. I hadn't a job and I had no intention of having a job.
Because you were going south again?
I was going south again. That was probably the summer I met the bold Valerie. Hmm. Or maybe it was later. It doesn't matter, but that's... And I went to... No, I don't think I did meet Val that time. Because I did the 18 months at Stonington and I came home again. And I thought, I wouldn't mind going to Deception. And I think that was in 63. That's when I met Val.
Val is?
The lady that ended up by being the headmistress.
Oh,
the
yeah.
friend of
At the
Annie.
School in Devon? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Let's talk about the Stonington season then, if we may. Because mm-hmm. You did get there, and you were there for the winter of 62.
Well, I can't remember the years.
I'm pretty sure that's correct.
Well, I know who was there, because he was a very good friend of me, was Ben Hodges and John Cunningham.
And Willie Gilchrist.
And Willie Gilchrist, yes.
The radio man.
The radio man.
Tell me about them, though. Tell me about Ben Hodges. Because he was a big dog man as well, wasn't he?
He was a big doggy man. Well, Ben was just Ben. There was nothing... I remember he came out to build a hangar at Deception, and then it went all. It was all. Didn't work. Well, it was going. No, the hangar was going to be built at Stonington, if I remember that right. And then they couldn't get into Stonington then. It was taken off the ship in Port Stanley and put in a big heap of metal. Then we came back and just decided to build it a deception. And Ben came because he was a steeplejack. But he stopped for years. I remember his sister always, because he was telling me what, I remember he said, "When are you coming home, Ben?" He worked in the Falklands. He helped to build a Goose Green, I think, and a school, a big school at Goose Green. And he's been to see me here.
Has he, here in Dundonald?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's seen Liz's mum. And he's been up to the garden I work at, up at Eland Derrick. He used to come up.
So there was Ben Hodges at Stonington in that year you were there. And who was the other chap you mentioned?
John Cunningham. He was, he was at that time, one of the best ice climbers Britain's ever produced. He was a ex-Craig Dhu man. Great friend of Hamish McInnes. And, well, I knew John quite well. And he died. Well, he it was very typical of him. He got a job at a school somewhere. And it was a girls' school, but they were in Anglesey. And I think one of the girls fell off. And of course, it was typical of the man. He went in and he couldn't swim. And he drowned.
He went into the sea to rescue a girl?
Yes, yes.
A school girl?
Yes.
And drowned?
Yes. I don't know when. It doesn't seem long ago, but it's... Time passes, but there's an old house at home, and there's in the Frenchman's Row. That's what is above it, but it is because it's got merci beaucoup. Because I think in there people went there during the terror in France, and it was underneath in English, time passes, but the memory remains. Mm.
When you were at Stonington, were you back to your old trade of being a diesel mechanic?
Yes, okay. Yes.
Tell me about what the sort of work you were doing there, Jim.
Well, I looked after the engines, and I also did the Met, because we didn't have any Met men, and I did the Met.
Had you been trained?
Oh, no. The Brits, the Fids never train anybody. No. It was a field station, and that's how I spent a lot of the time. Just with Willie was a wireless operator, and I was a diesel mechanic, and of course everybody else was sledging all over the place, and we were just left on base to selves.
How did you feel about that?
I quite enjoyed it.
You didn't mind missing out on the sledging?
Not really. Well, I did do some sledging, but I didn't go away on any of the trips because my job there was I was the diesel mechanic, and I was doing the Met, and it's Macquarie. I did the elephant seals at Macquarie and what are they called, the giant petrels. I was sort of like a biologist or a bird man.
Did you get out and about on your own 2 feet much at Stonington?
All the time. I was away every day for a walk, morning and evening. But I was just... And Willie was just waiting to do traffic, and I was just went for walks, as I still do. I've been for a walk this morning. I would miss me walks. I don't go as far on as fast as I used to, but I still go. But I remember going. I used to love. I remember Stonington particularly, when the sun was coming back, looking north to Adelaide, to the mountains of Adelaide, because. It was dark at Stonington, and I mean dark. It wasn't very far south, but it was dark for 10 weeks, and not like Admiralty Bay. It was black, But then when the sun started to come back and you got all these beautiful colours of greens and purples, and but the sun wasn't up, and then comes the great day when the sun is above the mountains away to the north. And I used to like to sit, and of course it's just the same. It's the same as here, because especially just in this little spot where we sit, we don't see the sun for 3 months of the year. It goes behind the mountain there. It only came back in February, and it goes in November, at the beginning of November. You can always get into it by going along the road, but if you happen to just live here and you don't have any transport, it's black. It's dark. It's not like stunning. It's not. You don't need a torch to go about. But, I liked Stonington. You've got the birds and you've had all the wildlife.
Did you have any rum?
Rum?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, we had plenty of rum.
So there's a story about some missing rum or hidden.
Oh, well, yes. Well, I know, there was some put to one side. I think there was, well, I did, because the place was closed. Yes. There was 37 gallons of it in the hens, we used to call them the grey hens, and it was, we used to get the navy came from Greenwich, and it was an old fashioned navy, I think it was a gallon thing, but with weaved paper stuff thrown about it, and yes, there was plenty. There was rum.
Well, there's a story though about these 37 jars of rum going missing or being hidden or something. Is that correct?
Well, I hid some. That's correct, yes.
Who were you hiding it from?
Well, I didn't... Well, anybody that was going to take it away.
This is when you were closing the basement?
Yes, when we were closing the basement.
You hid the rum to stop anybody from pilfering it?
Yes.
Is it still there?
As far as I know, it is. I didn't take any.
Where did you hide it?
Ah, well...
You're not telling.
Not telling. Because I might go someday. I'm sure somebody knows, though, because there was more than me knew where it was. But it was never... None of it was ever taken, as far as I know. But it was part of the... It was part of the ration. It was nearly like the Royal Navy. It was tot time. Mm. But, I don't know. I don't think I've got very much to say. I enjoyed it. And I think you get used to it. I know when you came back that I found it... Well, I was all right once I got home, but... If I was in the cities, I could never judge the speed of things. Getting across a road. Cars. I had to wait. There was a big gap. Because the fastest thing I'd seen for 2 years was a bloody husky dog. But, I mean, if you came out of Southampton Station or something like that, or Edinburgh, in onto Princes Street, it's a bit... It was a bit odd. Because you had to get a... You know, kept... And I thought... Because I know that before I went, I could nip across the road, just boom, 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 and I was across. But I couldn't. I had to wait till there was a bloody big gap, and I knew I was safe to get across.
Let's take a pause, Jim, and then we'll come back and talk about your time at Deception Island.
Oh, well.
Okay.